Las tradiciones son la esencia de las fiestas. Comienza una nueva tradición ahorrando en más de 2,400 marcas para comprar en más de 1,000 tiendas, incluyendo Lowe's, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy y más. Ahora mismo, iBoro ofrece a nuestros oyentes $5 solo por probar iBoro usando el código La Música al registrarte. Simplemente ve al App Store o Google Play Store y descarga la aplicación gratuita de iBoro para empezar a ganar reembolsos. Usa el código La Música. Eso es IBOTTA en Google Play o App Store y usa el código La Música.
The Last Word on Today FM.
We have a whole series of leader interviews that are available to you as podcasts on the Today FM site, but our last one of the general election series is today with the leader of Fine Gael, Taoiseach Simon Harris. Thank you very much for being with us on the programme.
Thank you so much, Matt.
First thing I want to ask you, though, you said it at least three times on the debate the other night that you had only been Taoiseach for 7 months. Why do you remind us of the amount of time that you spent as Taoiseach so often?
Oh, it's a fair question, and I've noted a lot of people. I've heard some people remark on it and joke about it. I suppose because this, I think leadership matters. And I think being the Taoiseach is a unique role in government, right? I've been a minister, let's be clear, for 8 years. There's no questioning of that. I've gained lots of experience in lots of departments. But the Taoiseach does have a very particular function in the government. The Taoiseach gets to convene, bring people together, get people around a table. They're probably one of the very few people in Ireland, and certainly in the public sector, who can do that. And I've tried to use that 7 months, I suppose, to show people the approach I take to leadership and that I take to addressing issues. But it has only been 7 months. And I also make that point because I inherited a programme for government. So you'll remember when you look back those 7 months, people would say things like, will he stick to the programme for government? Will he pull a stunt and call a quick election in the summer? Will he try and undermine Fianna Fáil or the Greens? And I hope on each occasion I show people that I did not do that. But I did inherit a programme for government. And now, as the leader of Fine Gael, this is the first election where
I'm saying you wouldn't necessarily have agreed that programme for government if you had been in Leo Varadkar's shoes at the time when you were negotiating it.
No, so I mean, I voted as a member of Fine Gael to accept the programme for government, and I worked to implement it. But now as Taoiseach, you do put a focus on certain areas and policy priorities, and every Taoiseach, every leader brings their own perspective, their own lived perspective, their own experiences. And this is, I did say when I ran for leader of Fine Gael, admittedly it was uncontested, but I did say to people that I wanted to help my party, I suppose, reconnect on a number of issues that I felt perhaps people thought we had maybe lost our way on a little bit, supporting small businesses, the agricultural sector as well, how we have a coherent migration policy, and definitely one area that I'm not satisfied we made enough progress, and I'm self-critical in relation to this, which is services for people with disabilities.
I will get to that, but you're admitting that you were part of a failing government.
No, I'm not. I suppose what I'm very much saying is that in politics, Michael Noonan used to always say to me, in politics, challenges never go away, they just change. And I think a change of leadership in any party, and indeed a change of leadership at the top of government, which we had 7 months ago, does provide you with an opportunity to refresh, to look at the issues anew. And like I say, I've really enjoyed the role of Taoiseach, and in many ways, I think my skill set has perhaps even been more suited maybe to this role than other roles I've had.
But you say, if there's a chance to refresh and renew, the voters could very well say, well, yeah, maybe we do need to do that, but not by putting Fine Gael back into power, given that Fine Gael has had a go since 2011, for nearly 14 years, that surely the time has come for change.
So some voters may say that tomorrow, but I think what a lot of voters might also say is when they look at those 14 years is realise that it's not a static period of time, that my party hasn't just been in government in some sort of continuum during that time. Situations have changed. The first time of that 14 years was rebuilding the country, the financial crash, the IMF in town. Then you had the Brexit period, fighting to protect our peace and our prosperity. Then you had the COVID pandemic, and now you have an inflation crisis. And also during those 14 years, we've been in government in different contexts. You know, a large majority with Labour, a minority government working with the opposition, and now this kind of grand coalition with Fianna Fáil for the first time ever.
You've made a lot about new energy. That's the slogan for Fine Gael. But there's no perception that perhaps that your energy is dissipated throughout this campaign. It's a bit like opening a bottle of champagne. All the fizz comes out and then it goes flat and it goes stale very quickly. I mean, once the energy goes out of Simon Harris, what's left?
A very fair question, but let me absolutely assure you that my energy levels are fine. But I've talked about new energy, and in many ways that's been interpreted as how fast can your man walk, or how many towns or cities can he get around. That's not what I mean by new energy. What I mean is trying to bring that new energy and new approach to issues that have seen to being stuck for a while, or issues that haven't gotten the level of focus that they perhaps require. So new energy very much needs to be read alongside our new policies, our new proposals, our new ideas. that we've set out in the Fine Gael manifesto. I am energetic as a person, but new energy as a slogan goes well beyond my personality.
I want to quote something that was in the Irish Mail on Sunday, the Sunday after the budget, in which it was said that in relation to the budget, there was a whole series of one-off payments. I think in every area of expenditure we saw increases, and as we step back we say, well, how will this change life for autistic people in 2025? And again, what we see is there will be some short-term benefits, but it will not address systemic issues, whether that is accessing the levels of support that are required within education or addressing the under-resourcing of disability services. It was your brother, Adam Harris, who gave that quote to the Irish Mail on Sunday. Did you react to him saying that in the way you reacted to Charlotte Fallon when she criticised you in Kanturk?
So two different issues, and I'd like to deal with them both. So in relation to autism services and the points that my brother made, not in the capacity as my brother, but as a leading autism advocate in this country, he's right. We're not where we need to be in relation to autism services. But I would make the point to him, but more broadly to people in general, that the policies we've put forward in terms of how we take this country forward very much address that. So, for example, and I do want to speak specifically on Charlotte Fallon. I don't want
to. We'll get to that.
So I'm not looking to avoid that, but I do want to respond on the autism piece. I mean, we have to change the model of delivery. So I can stand up on the Dáil and I can be handed sheets of paper that will say, you know, we've increased the budget by this or the staff by that. I know the lived reality for people, though, that hasn't got through. And that's why I'm very much proposing a different approach. It's why I've set up a cabinet committee that I personally chair as Taoiseach to not accept the siloed mentality that's often offered to people with autism. That's a matter for education. That's a matter for health. It's why I'm saying very clearly we have to put therapists, speech and language therapists, OTs, physiotherapists in schools, because I know what it's like when you get a place for a child in a special school and think, that's great, that'll be progress now, only to find for so many of the therapies they need, you go on a health waiting list. It's why we're doubling the number of training places in Irish universities to have that pipeline of graduates. And it's why we're very specifically saying in the Fine Gael manifesto, we'll actually have to offer a signing up payment effectively for anybody who's willing to join disability services or mental health teams to get to where we need to get to. So I take criticism. I take it because it's valid. We live in one of the wealthiest countries in the world. I'm proud of so much of what we have done as a government, as a party, the progress we've made as a country.
But what sort of conversation did you have with your brother about that?
Proud of where we're at in relation to that. I don't know if my brother and I specifically discussed that, but I'm extremely proud of him. He's a brilliant person who makes a very positive impact in Ireland, as do so many people.
Yeah, but I wonder what he makes of what you were able to do in your 4 years plus in the Department of Health, and then maybe Department of Further Education is not particularly relevant, although not entirely. There are relevancies
there.
I mean, his criticisms would suggest that during your time as minister and as Taoiseach overseeing the first budget under your watch, you haven't gone near far enough to deal with an issue with which you have intense personal experience.
And that's why, back to the first point you said, why do you keep referencing the 7 months? Because I accept fully that we are not where we need to be in relation to disability services in this country, particularly for children with additional needs. And I am making it my life mission and my mission in the office of Taoiseach to rectify that for once and for all. And in relation to, let me just give you a couple of examples. So I did take steps in every department I was in to try and make progress. So for example, I changed the law when I was Minister for Health to provide a child in receipt of domiciliary care allowance with an automatic entitlement to a medical card. You remember that farce we had where people were having to be subjected to reviews and reapply for conditions that were going to be lifelong. And in the Department of Further and Higher Education, I worked really closely with the likes of the Trinity Centre for People with Intellectual Disabilities to roll out new pathways for people with intellectual disabilities and autism to progress from second level into higher education. But being Taoiseach does give you that bird's eye view, that opportunity to look at how society works. The Minister for Education, the Minister for Health, our ministers in individual departments, the Taoiseach has an ability to bring people together around the table and fix the issue once and for all. And I would contend, as somebody new to the role, as somebody with lived experience, somebody who is passionate about this, this is an area I intend to absolutely prioritise should I be given the honour of leading the next government.
And let's talk about Charlotte Fallon, because for a lot of people that has been the defining image of the campaign. It has been certainly the thing that's got an extraordinary amount of views on social media. And you have apologised for the way that you spoke to her, and I accept that you are sincere about disabilities and your desire to do things, but could it be that it was revealing of you that maybe there's a little bit of a thin skin when you are subjected to criticism or questioning?
I really hope not. So let me restate the obvious. I messed up, didn't step up to the plate, and I let myself down on an issue that matters to me more than any other issue, right? Let me say that firstly. Second thing I'd say is I have, probably not fair to say thousands of conversations every day, but probably hundreds of conversations every single day during this general election campaign. My first campaign as a leader, every moment caught on camera, every moment with journalists there. So it's all there. People have seen this. People have seen this throughout the last 3 weeks, hundreds of conversations every day. And in relation to that conversation, I just got it wrong. I just got it completely wrong. But I hope and I think and I believe that the Irish people more judge you on what you do when you mess up. And what I didn't do was engage in whataboutery or try to convince the people that there was something, you know, that there was that I was tired or any of that sort of nonsense. I messed up. And what I did was I spoke to Charlotte, a very good conversation with her. She raised two issues with me, both of which, ironically, we're in full agreement on: the need for pay parity for workers in Section 39 of Disability Services and the need to abolish the means test for the carer's allowance. She was really gracious and I appreciate that. I've agreed to visit her, not with cameras or media or electioneering, privately. And in fact, I got a really nice, very generous and very insightful letter from St. Joseph's Foundation where she works in Cork. So sometimes you just get it wrong, Matt.
Yeah, but the Section 39 issue that you identified, for example, yet again, why is it only now that you're promising to do it? Why haven't you done it during the 14 years in power?
And I understand the 14-year argument. I do, and I hear it all of the time. And I don't want to sound like a broken record, though, but it suggests that everything can be done in politics and your in-tray is empty and you say, that's grand, I'm out of here. That's not how politics works. I mean, every day you try to make progress on issues, but there's always more to do. And there's always more to do. And in fairness, in the Section 39 issue, long before I went to Canturk, my party's manifesto was really clear on this. The manifesto we'd published many days before I was in Canturk clearly states a commitment in relation to Section 39 workers. And we had, in fairness to the three parties in government, in the last public sector pay talks, committed to working with unions to resolve this.
Let's talk a little bit about your record as Minister for Health. And that goes back a little while, but there were people who say that the last government was deliberately collapsed by Leo Varadkar, that he called a general election to avoid losing a motion of no confidence in your stewardship of the Department of Health. What did you learn from your failures and disappointments during that time in the position?
So I suppose, and I don't reject the premise of the question, but I suppose it starts from a negative slant, right? I'm proud of a lot of what I achieved in health. I think the people of Ireland saw me provide leadership during the COVID pandemic. I think the people of Ireland saw me play, I hope, a constructive role on a sensitive issue around repeal the eighth and engage in a respectful way. There's children, if they're not listening to this programme, their parents are, who have cystic fibrosis, who we worked together to get them life-altering drugs. What I did learn in relation to the Department of Health, though, is it is important, I think, to stay, and this is what I tried to do as Taoiseach, to try and stay focused on a relatively small number of issues at any one time. Department of Health, you can get up in the morning, you can plan to boil the ocean, you can plan to fix all these things, and life comes at you fast in there. But I also did do something in the Department of Health that I think will be transformational for this country. The benefit of being in a minority government, there are many downsides, the benefit of being in a minority government was, every time I went into the Dáil, I didn't have a Dáil majority and we had to work constructively across the aisle with the opposition. And we did agree this Sláinte Care plan. And I think, I'm not going to be pedantic about any party, I think pretty much all parties now have bought into that as the direction.
And how much of it has been implemented?
Quite a lot. It is, I have to admit, when you get plans from a Oireachtas committee, sometimes they can be a little bit high level. But give you one example. One of the big changes it proposes is the new consultant contract, that you pay hospital consultants much more. You actually pay them one of the highest salaries in the OECD, but in return you expect public-only work in public hospitals. That's now happened. And in many hospitals, around 90% of consultants have signed up to that. Things like expanding and treating chronic diseases in the local GPs have happened as well. So my time in health was turbulent. It was a minority government, let's remember that. And the politics of a minority government is very, very different. And we saw that across a range of departments during that time.
You mentioned you're proud of your performance during COVID, but one of the things that I think a lot of people would like further clarity and explanation on is the policy of moving particularly elderly people out of hospitals into nursing homes where many of them died. Now, in retrospect, do you think that the policies brought in by NPHET, which you endorsed, were still the correct ones, or do you wish that you might have done it differently?
So I don't want to say anything in any way insensitive to anybody who experienced a loss, and the COVID period of time was an extremely dark and painful period. And while objectively Ireland did well during that period of time relative to other countries, it doesn't take away from the loss of life and the pain. When you are a minister, you are reliant, obviously, on expert advice. and the expert medical advice, and these were clinical decisions that were followed. I took the approach from day one in COVID to be led by the medical advice, to be led by the scientific advice. We didn't get everything right in COVID. Let me not suggest we did. And that's why there should and will be a full evaluation of the situation. But I do think it showed people in Ireland pulling together. I think it showed the public service pulling together. I think it also showed what you can do when you can bust through bureaucracy. Things like being able to get an electronic prescription happened overnight, haven't been talked about for years, as one example.
But then why aren't more things done like that? Why is it that it takes a crisis to get things done in government?
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. I try to now bring that can-do attitude to lots of different areas, and I'm happy to discuss many of them. So I reference disability as one area where I've set up a cabinet committee now. We'd had for a long, long time this circular debate about using private capacity to help more kids get assessments of needs. And when I became Taoiseach, we just did it. We'd been debating whether we were going to put therapists back in special schools or whether we're better to have them in the community. We just moved on with it. We debated in relation to migration. There was nearly a public health outbreak on Mount Street because there had been tents there for months and months and months. You'll remember I got people around the table and we moved that from Mount Street, moved the tents from Mount Street and provided people with more humane conditions and didn't allow a situation where the law could be flouted. So I learned
Because Mary Lou MacDonald once got into trouble for actually describing the public service as constipated in the way that it went about doing its work. Essentially, are you agreeing with that? That you believe that the public service needs to be regularly not just prodded but booted to actually get things done?
I would never use the language constipated, but I would think sometimes, and this is not the fault of our public service who are very good, it's actually the fault of political leaders, the political system. The system is designed in a very siloed mentality. This responsibility for this lies with one agency. Like when I called the first meeting, Matt, on can everyone who has responsibility for anything to do with Mount Street and the tents that have cropped up in Mount Street and been left there for months, I mean, you should have seen the room was packed. I mean, the number of agencies and local authorities and government departments and ministers who had partial responsibility. And that's back to the point of the attributes you need in a Taoiseach. The job of the Taoiseach is to pull people together and to cut through that.
All of the main political parties that might lead government, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, are making enormous promises based on the possibilities of continuing tax revenues, particularly from corporation tax. Many economists are warning them that this is dangerous. It could even be reckless. So let's just assume that the tax revenues don't come in over the next 5 years, as you're assuming. Do you raise other taxes? Or do you borrow money? Or do you cut back on the spending that's planned? What's it going to be?
So first thing to say is Fine Gael is not proposing using windfall tax for day-to-day spending. Check this out very carefully. So we're committing to the 5% spending rule. There's about 34.7 billion, I think, that has come in corporation tax this year so far. Department of Finance estimates that about 15 billion of that could be windfall. In other words, could disappear if there was a shock. Unlikely all to disappear at once, but could disappear. Direct answer to your question is if that does happen, and we should work to mitigate it, maybe we can talk about that, but if it does happen, we will borrow for housing. We will obviously not put money into the rainy day fund at that stage, because at that stage it'll be economically lashing rain. And then thirdly, but very much in this order, we'd obviously have to phase the pace of introduction of some of the new measures. But the way our budget is constructed, and this does differ in fairness to other parties, Sinn Féin is committing to 27 billion more in public spending than we are. We have not factored in the use of windfall for day to day. And I think that does provide an important buffer.
Okay, when it comes to spending, you were Minister for Further and Higher Education, and there are many people who say not enough money has been invested in that sector, and yet what you're proposing to do is abolish the fees that some people actually pay. How are we going to get a better further and higher education system if there's less money going into it?
Because truthfully, there'll be more. So what we're actually doing is there's a thing called the National Training Fund in Ireland. Any employer listening to this will know, because they pay a levy into that National Training Fund. It has a surplus of nearly 2 billion euro. And when we got agreement, again, this was something I prioritised as Taoiseach, I asked Pascal Donoghue and Patrick O'Donovan, the Ministers for Public Expenditure and Higher Education, to put in place a multi-annual plan. So any university president listening to this programme tonight, anybody working in a university, will see that we have now committed to enough funding for our university sector to basically properly fund it based on the analysis that was carried out. I do want to be really clear. I don't apologise or regret in any way saying we're going to abolish the registration fee. I think it's important. If you have three kids in college, it's $9,000 a year for registration fees each year before you do anything like student accommodation. But I do want to be really clear. we're allowing for that in our plan. In other words, we would be putting that money in instead of the taxpayer, instead of the parent paying the bill, instead of the student. It's not that the money will come out of the sector.
There's a lot of children don't get to third level education because they come from backgrounds where there are financial issues. And the big criticism that has been made of your Acorn Fund is that wealthier people are going to be able to top up the gift that comes from the state, and those who come from deprived backgrounds won't. So by the time children get to the age of 18, it's likely that those who come from comfortable backgrounds will have a windfall of €53,000, and those who come from more deprived backgrounds will have 3,000. Copper fastening inequality. Why would you do that?
So if that's all we were doing, that your analysis would have some... I could understand it somewhat, but... What we're actually doing here is we're setting up a savings account for every child. You're right. If you get the €1,000 and you top it up to the max every year, it would amount to 53,000 by the time the child is 18. But for most people, it isn't going to be as stark as that at all. I mean, any parent listening to this programme knows they try to, whether it's sticking 10 or 20 quid into the credit union, whether it's setting aside money at Christmas, whether your granny gives you something at your Holy Communion. What we're trying to do here is provide a structured way of helping families save from birth through to adulthood. We're putting more in for a child from a disadvantaged background. And I'd make this point too, the way it's set up, there's nothing to stop governments topping that up. I mean, if I'm the Taoiseach at times of surplus, I'd like to be able to, instead of spending things on irresponsible things, as sometimes governments do, I'd actually like to be able to top that up for children. So this is an important thing to do, but there's much more we need to do on child poverty, to be really clear.
Well, indeed, because we have 4,561 children currently living in homeless services in Ireland. There are 378 families living in hotels and hostels in Dublin for over 2 years. Surely that needs to be sorted out rather than putting money into the Acorn Fund.
Well, to be really clear, that's a much bigger priority for me, for government and for Fine Gael, than anything to do with an Acorn Fund. I stand over the Acorn policy, but getting children out of homelessness is a priority. Can I say two things I want to do on that? Firstly, you'll expect me to give the answer that we've got to increase supply and to tell you we're going to do that and we're going to fund it, and that's all true. I've met, though, with the likes of Focus Ireland, with Sister Stan, with Penny Dinners in Cork, and one of the ideas I've come up with after meeting them, engaging with them, is we do need to restructure how we're allocating social houses. It's very hard for people to comprehend, including me, how we gave out the largest number of social houses last year since the 1970s, and yet the number of homeless people rose in our country. So I've stitched it into the Fine Gael manifesto. We have called it out. We're back in government. We're going to have to change the allocation of social housing to prioritise homeless families. There's lots of people in Ireland who have a housing need. Of course there is. But you have a much more acute need if you're a child without a roof over your head sleeping in a hotel.
You're in your late 30s. You're married with children. You own your own home, don't you?
I do.
You're in the fortunate position. What age were you when you were able to buy your own home?
I bought my house in 2017. So I was... I'm struggling to remember what year it is now. But I was Minister for Health at the time, so I was in my early 30s.
But you would have been on a six-figure salary, so you were in a position to be able to afford.
I was in a very fortunate position.
Yeah, so many people of your age, many people of your social circle, how many of them are unable to buy their own home?
A lot of people in my generation, and I'm obviously of an age now where I'm 38, are at that age where they're beginning to buy their own home. But can I answer what
to I begin think? Begin at the age of 38.
Yeah, no, I want to answer that question directly. The age at which people are buying their home in Ireland has significantly increased. That's factually correct. And I think the average age is now around 38 or 39. No one needs a history lesson. We know why that is. Bottom fell out of the economy. People stopped building houses. The construction sector collapsed. When I got elected to the Dáil in 2011, there were 6,900 and something homes built that year. This year we'll get certainly much closer to 40 than 30,000. We have a funded plan now in Fine Gael to get to 303,000 homes over the next number of years. But, and this is what I say to the first time buyers, to the likes of the people of my generation, the worst thing to do right now would be to pull the rug from first time buyers and cancel the Help to Buy scheme or the First Home scheme. They're not perfect schemes, Matt, but they are making a real difference. In my county of Wicklow, my constituency, 2,875 young people have used the Help to Buy scheme to buy their first home. Over 50,000 people have nationally used it. And while I can't look at a young person in the face and say, listen, don't worry, we'll have loads of houses in the future, give us another 4 or 5 years. I have to be able to show them a way to bridge from now to then. And that's what the Help to Buy scheme assists in. That's what the First Home scheme assists on. And I've met younger people who've said to me, that First Home scheme is grand, Simon, but it's only for new homes. So we're actually going to tweak the First Home scheme, not the Help to Buy, the First Home scheme, and allow it be used for the next 5 years for second-hand homes as well. These are bridging measures. Looked at what the central bank says. I've looked at what Mazar said. The benefit of these far outstrips any inflationary impact.
Home ownership has fallen into the low 60% category. It's one of the lower levels we've been at in many, many years. And I suspect if you look at the age distribution of that ownership, it's going to be largely towards older people. So are younger people in this country facing into a situation where only a relatively small number will be able to afford to own their own homes, and everyone else will either be renting from the state or from the private sector?
No, they're not. They're absolutely not.
Now, why not?
It is true, because we're going to fix housing supply. I mean, we're in this crisis, we're in this challenge of housing supply because we haven't been building enough homes consistently for a long enough period of time. We went through a period, Celtic Tiger Ireland, too many homes, ghost estates, mortgagers, we know that. Then we went through a period of no money, no builders, and now we're back to actually building. All of the expert advice suggests you need to get up to about 60,000 homes, but not just for 1 year and say, whoop-de-doo. You need to keep it there. You need to keep it there out into the future. And what we're trying to do in real time, and what we're going to do in real time, is get it to there by over the next number of years. And what the Fine Gael plan does, in fairness, and you'll remember perhaps, I kind of insisted on this before I called an election, that housing targets for the next number of years would be delivered. Anyone who sits in this studio or anywhere else and tells you they can do 80,000 homes, 90,000 homes next year is lying. They're not telling the truth. But you can increase the number of houses each year. You can get it to 60,000. You can keep it at 60,000. And that's how you get home ownership back to where it needs to get to.
Simon, I'm 20 years older than you. I grew up in the 1980s, finishing college at a time when so many of my friends and my generation emigrated because of the lack of jobs. By the end of the 1980s, there were 1.1 million people working in Ireland. So it's quite extraordinary that we have about 2.7 million working in the country now. And yet we have high levels of emigration. And we have lots of young people, even in a full employment economy, deciding they want to go. So what does that say about whether this is a country for young people? That the cost of living is so high for them, that rents are so expensive, that the chances of buying a house are so slim, that in a full employment economy, they're saying, we're going anyway.
I said this in the debate the other night, the leaders' debate, and I got a little bit of kickback on it, and so be it. But I made the point that I wanted to get the children of people in this country back home from Australia. And that's what I want to do. And so many people, if people want to leave the country for a variety of reasons, that's one thing. No one should feel they have to leave our country. And that's what we need to fix. We have been through a series of economic and social shocks. There's people watching this listening to this program tonight, and they'll say, I'm working really hard, on paper I have a decent salary, and I still struggle to make ends meet. You have lived through the largest inflationary crisis possibly in your lifetime, certainly since the 1970s. But Ireland has something now that it's rarely, two things that it's rarely had at the same time, money and a plan. For the first time since I've entered politics, I genuinely believe we actually have those two things coming together in a way that will make real progress over the next number of years. And that's why the Fine Gael manifesto is not just about kind of cost of living or baubles to help people through the next few weeks or months. They're important. People say to me around the country, the extra payments have made a difference. But they say what they'd much rather is changes permanently to cut the cost base in Ireland. So one example, childcare. Permanently reducing the cost of childcare, €200 per month per child, permanently reducing the VAT rate on food services, so cafes, restaurants and the likes, doing it within 100 days, permanently increasing the rate at which you pay the higher rate of tax, because someone on the average income shouldn't be paying the higher rate of tax. And we've already gotten that up from when this government came to office in 2020, you were paying the higher rate of tax at just over 35 grand. Under the Fine Gael plan, you won't pay it until 54,000. So this is the progress we can make. So I say to those young people who've left, I say to those parents who are worried their young people will leave, we have a way forward now. We really do. And I believe, respectfully, it's called the Fine Gael Manifesto, and that's why I'm asking for you to vote Fine Gael tomorrow.
Okay, let's talk about justice and crime. And I want to ask you about Garda numbers, because, and this is a point that I've put to the other political parties as well, that it all seems like, and this goes to a lot of the money spending that's been promised by all the political parties, that this is aspirational stuff that will never be delivered. You're talking about how many extra guards? 6,000?
6,000.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, you can barely keep the ones that you have, the ones that are retiring. People even go into Templemore for their training and then decide they're not going to bother actually going onto the force, having done their training. And suddenly, and you and all the other political parties are telling us by some miracle that you're going to be able to find all the people to fill these positions in Garda Síochána.
So let me begin by acknowledging the fair point you make that recruiting and retaining Gardaí has been a real challenge. And no matter who's in government, that challenge exists when the country is at full employment. However, there are other things that are also true. I think around 740 people entered Templemore last year, highest number in many years. The Garda College was closed twice during the pandemic, and that definitely disrupted recruitments keeping up with retirements, right? So you didn't recruit new guards, because of a global pandemic, and yet Gardaí reached retirement age. we do now see such a level of interest in joining on Garda Síochána that we're beginning to actually ask the question around retention. So if that many people, I think 5,000 people initially submit applications to be guards, so there is interest. So what do we have?
How many come through the process?
It's a very fair point. A lot fall off. So I think 740 through Templemore last year is the direct answer.
And was that enough to cover retirements?
I think it will exceed retirements this year. It will exceed retirements. But let me be really clear. It's not enough. We're about 1,000 Gardaí short in Dublin and we need about 6,000 more Gardaí. However, it is possible. I spent a brief time as Minister for Justice and would have engaged with the Gardaí on this too. We need a second Garda training college. The model of training Gardaí is, in my view, no longer fully fit for purpose. Templemore does a great job, no issue with that. But like, if you're 35 years of age and want to be a guard, do you want to, if you live far from Templemore, have to trek to Templemore when you have maybe a university much nearer you on your doorstep? That's one issue that Fine Gael is committing to doing, setting up a second Garda college. Looking at the issue of the Garda training allowance, we've doubled it or almost doubled it over the last couple of years. We're committing to doubling it again to €610 a week to make it more attractive to enter the guards. Putting body cams on guards, because I do think one of the factors that has changed, Matt, is the role of policing. The fact that Gardaí turn up at places and people stick camera phones in their faces and the guard is meant to kind of stand there while people do that. Putting a body cam on every guard next year, and we've started it in Dublin, Waterford and Limerick. These are important measures that we need to take.
We've had a massive increase in the adult population. We had Art O'Leary in the first half hour of the programme telling us about well over 400,000 people who didn't vote in the last general election will be able to vote now. We have had many more immigrants coming into the country as well. So with 5.2 million people in the country, why have you not built new prison spaces? And I know you'll add you've a couple of hundred here, a couple of hundred there, but it's about 15, 20 years ago since we were talking about a modern prison facility out in Wheatfield, yes, Thornton Hall, to replace the outdated facilities in Mountjoy. Why did you not just get on with doing that?
So we are committed to building a new prison. And our manifesto commits. You're right, and I can
how
see,
many times
I can see for the benefit of the listeners, I can see the scepticism. But let me say this: we have, as you say rightly, increased prison capacity, and we have looked at how we can increase prison capacity. And it's exactly for the reason you say. It's not because we want to incarcerate more people; it's because the population has grown, and also we're passing harsher sentencing quite rightly to fit more heinous crimes too. So we are committing in Fine Gael for once and for all to actually build an additional prison on Thornton Hall. Other parties aren't. I think it's appropriate. When we talk about the criminal justice system, we have to have enough Gardaí, enough court capacity and enough prison capacity. That's the pipeline, the three parts that need to work. And when any one of those parts is clogged or under-resourced, we hit a problem. That's why 6,000 more Gardaí, more judges and reforming the court service and expanding prison capacity.
Okay, a couple of things just to finish. The start of the campaign was marked by the comments that Michael O'Leary made about teachers, and you distanced yourself immediately from him and went to the defence of the teachers. But might it not have been the case that maybe Fine Gael might do better if it embraced the ideas of the most successful Irish man of his generation, Irish businessman?
Michael O'Leary is a very successful businessman. He's just not a successful politician. And my daughter is 5 years of age. She started in junior infants. I have enough challenge mind in one five-year-old. When I see somebody standing up at the top of the class, not seeking to mind, but seeking to nurture and inform the mind of these young, amazing children, it's a bloody tough job. And in a country where, as you rightly say, lots of the issues we've discussed, special education needs, inclusivity, diversity.
Sorry, he never criticised their work as teachers. What he'd said was about them taking decisions in politics. That we have, 19 teachers in the outgoing Dáil, that perhaps we need more people who have had success in other areas of life to be more reflective of the broadness of Irish society.
I don't think he said it in that lovely nuanced way you said it. I mean, if the question is, does the Dáil need to have people in it that reflect all walks of life? Absolutely. Are there teachers running for Fine Gael? There are, and I can name them all. Una McCarthy and Imelda Daly. There's lots of teachers running for Hildegard Nocht and Jerry Butler. Lots of people.
Okay, sorry, we have.
Yeah, you got a few of them there. Yeah. Lots of the people who have been teachers. But we're also running in Fine Gael people who've served as the guards, people in the guards, people who've served in our defence forces, special needs assistants, people who've ran businesses. It is, you do need diversity in the Dáil. Michael has his own inimitable style. I just don't, that's not how I engage in public discourse.
Final thing I want to put to you, and the opinion polls are opinion polls and they matter for nothing by the time the votes are cast tomorrow, but it does look like any ambitions you might have had at the start of this election campaign, that maybe yourselves and Fianna Fáil could back into government together without needing a third party, look, according to the opinion polls, as if they won't happen. You are going to need additional support. You could also be in a position where Fianna Fáil might have significantly more seats than Fine Gael in the next Dáil. In that circumstance, would you be prepared to serve as Taoiseach rather than Taoiseach for the duration of a government to provide stable government to the state?
I don't know if you asked that question to Micheál Martin, and maybe you did, but the opinion polls are tied. Like, let's be honest, they're utterly tied. In fact, in the Red Sea, in the Business Post last night, it showed that when you give the people of Ireland a ballot paper, 21% said they're voting Fine Gael, 21% said they're voting Fianna Fáil, and 19% said they're voting Sinn Féin.
But there are transfers, there are regional variations, and the rest of it.
Very honest, Mystic Meg herself couldn't predict the outcome of this election.
But if it was to happen that Fianna Fáil ended up with significantly more seats than you, if it meant forming a stable government for the good of the state, would you be prepared to act for the duration as Taoiseach rather than having a rotating Taoiseach?
I'm running in the election tomorrow with Fine Gael candidates across the country to lead the next government. There are enough candidates and enough people willing to vote for Fine Gael, I believe, to make that happen. Once the people of Ireland have given their decision, of course everybody will need to engage in a responsible way. But I do think parity of esteem has mattered in relation to this government. The two parties, the two traditional Civil War parties, if you like, and we're a long way from the Civil War, thank God, but I think the parity of esteem element has been very, very important to the stability of the government. There's been too much, though, in this campaign of, I want that department, I want to go first. I find it unedifying, I haven't engaged in it, and I'm humbly asking people to vote Fine Gael tomorrow.
Simon Harris, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
The Last Word on Today FM.